Before we head into this episode, just a heads up that this episode was pre-recorded from late 2025. Some of the films mentioned won't be the most recent releases, but if you want to stay up to date with the industry, then check out our socials at alwaysonfilm.pod and stay tuned for more up-to-date season 2. Enjoy!
Clappy clap. Oh yeah. Oh yes.
Hello everybody and welcome to Always on Film, brought to you by the Transmission Roundhouse.
Thank you guys so much for tuning back in to another episode. Today, Lou, Kitty and I are going to be chatting to the wonderful Megan Treadway about her amazing career spanning from stage and screen, chatting all things drama school experience, her breaking into the industry and her most recent project, Murder Before Evensong.
Thank you so much for joining us here today.
Thanks for having me. It's a beautiful sunny day.
Yeah, it's actually such a nice day today.
It's very welcome, isn't
it?
It's
lovely. I was like, need this for the start.
Perfect.
Yeah, so we sort of start every episode with just some like gentle starting questions.
Ease me in.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, just a little warm up, you know. Yeah. So what have we all watched recently? Have we watched anything good, been to the cinema lately or just on, you know, streaming?
Yeah. I mean, me and Kitty yesterday went to see The Long Walk, the Stephen King adaptation.
Yeah.
Very intense film.
Was it?
Very intense film. Yeah. It was one of those movies where I don't think I'll ever watch it again.
Because it was too much.
It's like because Stephen King, right? And it's so violent and it shows it so much that the movie itself I loved and I really enjoyed, but I was like, I don't think my stomach can do that again.
Yeah.
Interesting.
But the performances in it, phenomenal.
Oh yeah.
Phenomenal.
I feel that way about Marriage Story.
I
can never watch it again, but the time that I did watch it, you impacted me.
Is honestly true. Movie has so much emotion to it.
It's so raw and like vulnerable. Yeah. And the performances are so good in that.
The performances are so good.
Breathtaking.
And it's just quite close to home.
Yeah.
For a lot of us, isn't it?
Like, it's so
It's very
honest.
Real.
Whereas, I think that's the only part that I guess I
this
could
wasn't
go
very real.
A whole lot.
But I did. I spent, like, the performances were amazing. So it's like partly I'm crying because of the acting, and then I'm also crying under my jacket hiding.
I
was like, Luelle, tell me when it's over.
No, there's this one bit that's just quite harrowing. And I've read the book, so I knew the outline and I kind of knew what was coming. So that I literally turned to Kitty and I was like, you need to go under your jacket right now.
Yeah.
Do not look.
Retreat.
It's good.
Exactly. I didn't even know it was a book before it was a film.
Stephen King.
Oh, Stephen King.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. But I didn't know the director is the same guy who did The Hunger Games.
Yeah.
Which I didn't
clock. Shows.
But is it more brutal than The Hunger Games?
Yes.
Like more?
Yes.
Wow. I saw Zootopia last night
for
the first time. That's really good.
Is it?
That's
that
a really
fun.
Good film. Yeah.
That is fun. Yeah.
I enjoyed that. I've never seen it before ever.
Yeah. Anything you've seen recently that you really enjoyed?
Yes. I'm such a big TV girl.
Yeah.
I love TV. And last night I started Nine Bodies in a Mexican Morgue. Have you heard of this?
No.
Guardian gave it 5 stars. And I was okay.
That's good review.
And it's quite interesting because it starts on day 9. Mm. The whole series opens on day 9 and then you work back.
So
track. It teases you very well. But a lovely, lovely actress I know called Lydia Wilson is in it. And I just think her work is phenomenal. So I thought I'd give it a watch. Yeah. So I'm only 2 eps in.
Yeah.
But it's quite intriguing.
See, I'm actually looking for something new to watch. So I might give that a shout.
And I haven't watched it yet, but I've heard House of Guinness is really good.
You were just talking about that
I was
earlier.
Desperate to watch it yesterday. Yeah. I had issues with my Netflix. It ruined my whole day.
Sorry, I
got home, from the long... I was going to watch that as well. And I was like, I'll get home from the Long Walk and watch that. I was like, no, actually, I watched She's the Man. Because I was like, I need to get over this.
Something a bit light.
The Shakespeare.
The 12th Night.
Exactly.
Channing Tatum.
We've talked about this in our last
episode.
Love that film.
It's so good.
It's great. So funny.
It never disappoints.
It just, I needed to like not think about Stephen King.
Damn.
Fair enough.
I'm scared of this film now.
No, do watch it.
Who's the main actor in it?
It's Cooper Hoffman.
Okay.
And David Johnson.
Okay.
And they're phenomenal. Both of them.
And Mark Hamill.
Mark Hamill, of course. Hello, Luke Skywalker.
Absolute legend, Mark Hamill.
He came on and Luelle just went, Luke Skywalker.
Yeah. Big Star Wars fan, so I've had a little freak out. I was like,
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So do you have, this is a hard question, I know, but do you have any favourite films?
Yes, I do. The Fifth Element is one of my favourite films of all time, because it just encaptures everything that I love about my job. It's so, I mean, of its time, it's so wildly imaginative.
Yeah.
And usually I don't like things set in the future, but it's so camp. And just exquisitely designed, and the plot is really great, and it's just, I just love it. And I remember watching it as a teenager and just thinking, yeah, like this is what your imagination
can do.
And I think it's, I mean, I've always loved Luc Besson films, but I think it's his best. I love it.
Yeah. Wow. That is a really good film. Yeah,
that is a really good one. I absolutely love it. Yeah. And I just love like the boats in the sky and the way they eat. And I mean, now it seems really dated because we are in the future.
But yeah.
It just, it's just so beautifully performed. Bruce Willis at the top of his game. Mm. Yeah, I love it. Yeah. And it just always makes me feel cozy and excited and like that kid again when I watch it.
Yeah, I feel like so nice, there is something in that though. When you watch a film that's set in the future and obviously that time is now past, I always find that so fun though, because I'm like, this is some weird alternative universe.
It's like their interpretation of it.
Jean-Paul Gaultier, I think, did some of the costumes, and like watching that vision of how people might dress in the future. It's just, I just love it.
Yeah, it's really interesting.
And I always feel like that when I watch Back to the Future Part 2.
You say that, like cars would be, like we'd have like hovering
cars.
Flying cars. Yeah. Around. Like 2020. Where's my hovering car?
I'd love the hovering car. That would make my life much easier.
Back to the Future 2 is definitely the best one, I think, as well.
Yeah. Although I do like the third one because it's weirdly a Western film and it's like, what's happened?
What's going on here?
Westerns turn me off. I don't know why. I just, if I wanted to look at men shouting at each other, I would go into the street.
Yes,
exactly. Enter Soho.
So, what's your favourite cinema, or do you have one? Like, what's your kind of watch setup?
Okay, I am cursed with this modern affliction of bougie cinemas. A velvet sofa or armchair, a glass of red wine.
And it is like a nice snack.
Yeah, I'm that woman, unfortunately. And, and once you do that, it's quite hard to go back. It's really hard.
Definitely.
I'm unfortunately a very posh cinema goer.
Yeah.
I
was going to say, have you been to the Electric in Notting Hill?
I haven't.
So gorgeous.
No. Is it?
Stunning.
I rarely venture to West London, but I think I would for that.
Yeah, it's stunning. Like, the interior is beautiful. The seats are so comfortable. Yeah. Very nice.
It almost feels like you're going into like the past almost.
Yeah, because it's really old feel to it.
And I like that kind of soporific, carpeted, soft furnishings feel.
Yeah.
When you watch a film, you want to feel like your attention is only on the screen, don't you?
Yeah. It's very Grecian. Like, they have like chaise longues basically, just like on the front row. It's just like beds.
Yeah. Wow. I
did think about that. I was like, how, because I haven't seen anyone sat on them. I've only seen people on the chairs, but I'm like, do they take their shoes off and just like recline?
How casual can you go?
Do you like pose? Or, like, it feels very sunbed-esque. Yeah. Like.
True.
But unfortunately, I also like cheap cinema, so that's the tear.
Yeah.
There used to be a great cinema on in Catford Broadway that's just shut now, but on I think on a Monday it was £5.
Wow. Nice. Peckhamplex, that used to have cinemas in Peckham, £5.99. Like,
Stepney Green's got, what's that cinema called in Stepney Green? That's like bougie and cheap, actually. So it's a beautiful marriage of the two.
And then I guess our last like icebreaker question is, do you have any hot takes? Is there an underrated, overrated film that you think of that...
I was thinking about this on the way here. There is an overrated film, but I've only recently ventured into the world of press and PR, and my agent was like, whatever you do, don't slag anyone off.
We'll do an underrated one then.
What I will say is the overrated film I'm thinking about... a lot of people loved, and I could see that it was a good film, but again, it was just lots of men shouting at each other, which I've experienced a lot in my life, and I just don't particularly have the interest to take my imagination there when I can see it whenever I want.
That's fair. But, like, we need something else.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the underrated film, I loved this film growing up. A lot of my favourite films are from when I was a kid, called The Horse Whisperer. Did you watch it? Okay,
that's weirdly...
Rings a bell.
I was going to say it rings a bell.
Well, it's Robert Redford, and I think that's why it's on the mind, because obviously he very recently departed this mortal realm. And it's him, it's Kristin Scott Thomas, and it's a young Scarlett Johansson.
Wow.
And she falls off her horse and has this debilitating injury, and he helps her and the horse, I think.
Yeah.
Kind of just recover and starts this romance with Kristin Scott Thomas. And it's so hot.
Yeah.
It's so hot. But it's also very pastoral, and it's just, it's very American. There's so much subtext. And I just, me and my sister just used to be allowed to watch it on a rainy day.
And that's so nice. I've been meaning to watch that. I've never gotten around to
it. It's beautiful.
It's on my list.
I haven't watched it in recent years, and I hope it's stood the test of time.
Yeah. Just as good.
I hope so. I hope it's still legit.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, Robert Redford, what an absolute babe.
Absolutely was.
Well,
okay, so... Knowing that you've now entered the industry and you're in the industry working, has that been something that you've always wanted to do? Or was there like a moment that you remember where you were like, that kind of solidified your passion for acting, for film, theatre, TV? Or was it kind of just like you always knew you wanted to do it? And then once you got to the point where you were able to, you were like, that's what I needed?
Yes. I did always know I wanted to do it.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that was because of the messaging that I was given as a child, like, oh, you're such an actress. I don't know why.
You're like, okay, I'll make a career out of that.
Sounds safe.
Yeah.
And so I did always know. And then I wasn't particularly involved in a lot of that as a hobby until I was about 14. And I remember my mum saying to me, look, if you want to do this, and if you want to go to drama school, and if you want to do this as a career, like, you need to start doing it.
Yeah.
And then it very quickly changed from this like pie in the sky dream to me going to youth theatre and so that kind of didn't really kick off, and maybe a bit later, like 15, 16, and then it was like my life, and I did it all the time. But I don't think I thought I could do it. I think I knew it was my dream, but I didn't necessarily, and I knew I wanted to do it, and something felt in my gut that I had to. But I don't think I necessarily thought I could.
Yeah.
And I tried for drama school twice, and the first year I didn't get in, and it devastated me.
I was going to say,
It absolutely devastated me. And then the second time I got in, and then once I got to Central, I think I was like, it's happening now.
It's happening.
Yeah. It's happening, and I'm going to do it.
Well, it's very intimidating, right? Like, especially facing rejection early on with drama schools and stuff. I think there's a lot of people with those stories.
Yeah.
And, like, having, I guess, the belief in yourself that, like, that doesn't define you, and you can still, you know... I mean, look at what you've done now. Look at what you've achieved now, right? Like... it's so impressive that you can like face those rejections and be like, that doesn't define who I am, and I still want to do this, and that is still my love and my passion. Yeah. So I am going to continue.
Yeah, that's the goal.
That is the goal.
But it can be tricky, and I think it's often I hear these stories of actors of like, and my teacher said you should do this, so I showed up to the audition, and then I was next Doctor Who all of a sudden. And it was never like that for me. I always felt like I had to work really hard, and I didn't really understand myself or acting, how it worked, and I think that's been a much longer journey than the 3 years that I spent at drama school as well.
So your time at Central then, was there, like, do you have some fondest moments? Do you have some biggest challenges that you overcame? Was there some surprises maybe that you learned about yourself or the craft of acting, or kind of the approach to acting that maybe you didn't realise what the thing beforehand.
Yeah, it was a very rigorous training. Mm. And I remember having a lot of feedback. And that first year, I was quite confident. I was quite secure. Mm. And I think I thought I was quite good.
Yeah.
And that completely changed in second year. And I just was like, oh, I'm terrible. And I don't know what I'm doing.
Yeah.
And then I sort of struggled through to the end of it. So I think I look back at that time, especially now I sometimes teach actors at that stage.
Mm.
I think I look back at that time realising that I was doing the best with the tools that I have, but a lot of that feedback I just didn't understand.
Yeah.
I don't think I had the confidence to say I don't agree sometimes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it was great. And the main thing that I'm super grateful to for Central especially is the way it's taught me how to be in a rehearsal room.
Yeah.
And I think that course, I did this course called CDT at Central, which is about collaborative improvised theatre. And I think it's given me a real ability to be in a rehearsal room.
Mm.
And it gave me my relationship with a theatre company called Complicité that I now have, which is so important to me.
Yeah.
So it gave me some really important things and it taught me so much.
Mm.
But the training very much kept going when I left.
Yeah.
And once I was able to synthesize some of those things that were said to me that I didn't understand, at the time, like, what's like a classic one? Like, oh, you apologize for yourself.
Yeah.
And that's such a hard note to receive as a young person if you don't necessarily understand.
Yeah, still kind of like wobbly on your feet anyway.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And it's only now in giving that note and seeing it in other young actors that I'm starting to realise some of that feedback that was given to me.
Mm.
And that's okay.
Yeah.
That's so interesting. Like, especially like going back and having that new perspective and having worked in the industry since, do you feel differently about the drama school curriculum, or is there anything that you tell these young actors differently to how you were having experienced the industry side since?
I think the main thing is, perhaps the thing I lost sight of is I love my job.
Mm.
Like, I love it.
Mm.
And I'm so aligned when I'm doing it or talking about it or just being in it. And I think that I forgot that that's the reason I chose that path, because I love it and it's fun.
Yeah.
And I was working so hard to try and get things right or, I just don't think I took time to be like, oh, what do I enjoy?
Yeah.
Why am I here? And like, that's what I say to my students now is like, some of my students, they work so hard. It's too hard.
Yeah.
Right.
And I'm like, you just need to take a step back. Like, why are you here?
Mm. Yeah.
Because not all of you will become actors.
Yeah.
And not all of you will have be dealt a fun hand here.
Mm.
So what can you do to connect to yourself and your love for this? And that's okay if that means you graduate with a 2-1 or a 2-2.
Yeah.
Yes. Or you're not the best.
Yeah.
That's so interesting, because I remember like the pressure to get a certain grade when you graduate drama school. And even in the first 2 years of leaving the industry, like 2 years is hardly anything at all, but it's already been such a roller coaster. And it's like the things that kept me going in the moments where I had those bumps was like, why did I start it? I wish like someone had drilled that into me.
Yeah,
like you've got to go back to the foundation of why you applied
for
this.
It's got to be fun.
Yeah,
but just think about like anything. Think about romance. Yeah. Like when you meet someone, if someone is having a really hard time and trying to get life right, they're not attractive.
Yeah.
And it's the same for artists. If they're not engaged with their work in a way that sparks joy, why are you doing it?
And so true.
That weight, I think, is so clear sometimes in artists. Mm-hmm. And no one is putting, in this country, a gun to your head in order to make you do art.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you know, and in many countries, people risk their lives to do art because they are, and they are so sure that that is their purpose. Mm. I was talking to the head of equity the other day, and he was saying, you know, some of our sister unions across the world, that those artists risk their lives. Those artists get killed to challenge the status quo through their work.
Yeah.
And so I think you've just got to reconnect to that joy.
Yeah, like,
and fun.
Yeah, exactly, that fun, that love, that why are we doing this, you know? Because I think that's what makes a good actor as well, oftentimes, you know, like being able to, it's so hard because I went to film school, right? And I experienced very similar things where all of a sudden the grades became the most important thing. And I forgot, why did I move here? Why did I go to this university? Why did I do any of it? And then it was actually not until I graduated, until I moved here and I did my MA here, that I kind of reconnected with the love of it.
Yeah.
Because I, for some reason, just didn't take it as serious anymore. Mm. And my grades were just fine.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And I think aligning yourself. Also, you just want to be a nice person to work with as well.
Yeah, like, so fun to be around. Yeah.
When you're aligned and you're having a nice time, that will be infectious.
Yeah. I think so.
Is there anything that you feel like you learn from your students? Like,
all the time. Yeah. The students I love teaching are the ones that I can see they're working out who they are as they go.
Mm.
And it's so charming when you see the veil just drop and this self-actualized young person engage with their work. And because so much of Travis School is teaching people not to perform.
True.
That when you see it happen, it's amazing. And seeing people bring their own challenges that they've brought with them from their life and how they can just park them and actually just be like here and now.
Yeah.
It's really beautiful. And sometimes you work so hard just to get someone to like stop speaking with their shoulders. Or like, you know, and then when you finally see it, you're like, come on.
You're like, more of that, please.
So it's very varied. All the levels are different. But when you see someone just drop their life performance and lock in the moment, it's really beautiful.
And you mentioned that you got into Central on your second year.
Yeah.
Was there anything that you worked on in that year of trying again, that maybe in your personal development or in your craft, that you think hired your chances? Or
I did do some workshops and some courses at home in Bristol, where I'm from, to kind of help engage with that. But I also lived my life.
Life experience.
I kind of made mistakes and I worked all the time in this bar with like people in their 20s, which I thought was the coolest thing in the world. And I also got very ill. I had glandular fever and I was really unwell for a long time. And so I just sort of lived and that I think was important. I don't think I'd probably got any better as an actor. I think I lived.
Yeah. And that probably came across in your performance.
It's a similar topic. We recently had another guest on and she was also talking, she's part of the Artful Dodger on Disney. She was also talking about coming, you know, growing and how much personal growth and like growing as yourself, you know, motivates you and brings you back to your character in a way, you know, when you then go to professional sets, etc. So I do think like actors thrive on life.
You've got to live. You can't just exist.
No.
You have to live.
And that's what I think, that's like what resonates so well with what you were saying of the like love for it and like the love for art, you know, because you got to balance it out to then be able to come into a space where you then do your job, but you're doing it with so much love and passion that it feels like it's part of that reaffirming life.
Yeah, it's really nice.
Well, you're currently in witness before prosecution, which is very exciting.
I was, yes. I've been out of it. Yes.
Come out. Okay.
I've been out of it for a year now, but last year. Yeah.
That's very, very exciting because you're also obviously Murder Before Evensong is coming out soon. And we were talking about how that's just two quite like similar but very different because it's theatre and then the TV experience. We were talking about this a little bit before where it's like something that's so immersive and it's like a very, especially Witness Before the Prosecution, it's like that's kind of a whole huge part of it. And then working on Murder Before Evensong, it's like TV, so it's all set and locked in. I was just wondering, like, how do you, there's such difference in character work there. Like, how is those, are those experiences even comparable or?
Yeah, they definitely are. I mean, the biggest difference between them was the constant changing nature of film. Yeah. When you're filming, you're just like, every day is different. Every day looks different. You're on different locations. You're quick. You have to deliver very quickly. And Witness was my first job in a while where I'd done a 6-month stint of doing the same thing 8 times a week.
Right.
And I, actually before Witness, it had been a while since I'd done theatre. I'd been doing some kind of bits and bobs, mainly in TV comedy.
Yeah.
And so my work had looked much more just like show up, do a few weeks here or there and just deliver. And so that stamina that Witness required was a lot for me.
Yeah.
And that part remain is this kind of big, amazing femme fatale, but she's quite hysterical. Like it's a big it's a big emotional journey.
Yeah.
And so I had never done that before. I'd never had to go in to work and bawl my eyes out every day.
Yeah.
And so like that was a big learning curve for me. And then the filming just looked very different. But I did probably do the most prep on the filming that I've ever done with a TV job before.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which looked a lot more similar to a theatre process.
That's so interesting. Yeah, because you're also, you mentioned sort of rehearsal experience a little bit. And I was wondering, because I feel like a lot of TV, they're leaning into a little bit more of how theatre productions rehearse a little bit more. But how was that process for you for Murder Before Evensong? Was it completely different?
Yeah, we did get a bit of rehearsal, which I've never had in TV before.
Yeah, because it's a bit rare, right?
Yeah,
I feel like some directors for film do like workshopping, but I feel like in TV it's seen less.
Yes, I think it probably happens when you play bigger parts.
Yeah.
So I'd never done it before.
Yeah.
but I have heard of people doing rehearsals before, and I think chemistry reads happen a lot and they look a bit like rehearsals. I did a bit of rehearsal for Murder with the lovely actor Alex, who plays my brother, and the director, and we just wanted to sort out the family dynamic. And what was so great about that is like I was expected to bring my A game at that rehearsal. I came in and it was like a really nice gentle chat, but then it would be like, okay, let's rehearse that scene. And you just had to be like, yep.
Yeah, like, right then.
I've got my choices. I've got a sense of who this person is. And it really challenged me to back myself and my work. And then after that, I think I went away and I thought about all this stuff I teach.
Yeah.
and so I did a lot of work on, I read all the books and I did all my work on all my given circumstances and every single scene. I had a real sense of like
objectives,
what I wanted and where I was coming from. And because you film out of sequence, that was also really helpful for a sense of a journey.
Yeah.
Do you know, so for this one, did you know the sequence that you were shooting in?
No.
Schedule
we got, this is quite common, I think. The schedule we got quite late, but only for the first block, so the first 3 episodes. So, and then sometimes you'd just be like, oh, we're just going to slot in this episode, or just like this tiny little scene here. So, no, but it did mean that I knew I was getting episodes 1 to 3 out the way first. But it was also all filmed in the Midlands.
Mm.
So it was great because every time I'd go up there, I'd get this whole train journey to just kind of get reset into the world.
That's
and
nice.
Look
yeah
at all my notes and learn my lines for the next day. Yeah. And just, wow. So yeah, that was lovely.
How do you approach lines? I mean, I think like theatre is very different from film, right? In theatre, yeah, you have this gigantic chunk of lines yeah that you need to remember on a daily basis, and it almost, you know, you did it 6 months, eight yeah times a week. It's in your brain yes at that point.
Yes. And I think when you rehearse, it goes in quite a bit as well.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not someone who can show up off book. Like, yeah, I need to yeah have rehearsed it and yeah workshopped it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's pretty much in.
Yeah.
I just need to go home and consolidate. Now, that is changing as I'm getting older, girls.
Yeah.
I feel like I used to be able to look at something once and it was in.
And it was in.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. And
you're good with lines as well. Yeah.
Yeah. It's not like that for me anymore. But I, with filming, rehearsing or learning lines, mm, it can be quite lonely.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's sort of what the night before is for. You just
yeah
you just look at what you're doing the next day. You make sure you know it all. You go over it in your hotel room. Yeah. What's always nice is when you're doing the scene that you auditioned for.
Because yeah
like, that's so in your body by
yeah
that
yeah
point. But yeah, I've got this line learner app and I use that.
Oh nice.
Like, yeah. So, you know, I get people put these poor buggers in my life to yeah just go over it again and again.
Again and yeah again, yeah.
Because the last thing that you want to do is show up and not know your lines and be thinking yeah about that instead of all your lovely work.
Yeah.
Or just being in the moment.
Yeah.
So I really tried on this to give myself that this job was interesting for that because I was going through a lot in my life and I was having to work everything round each other. And so that was interesting, like how I could how much of myself I could give in the most efficient way,
yeah,
so that I could still do hospital visits and, you know, whatever yeah I was yeah doing yeah else at the time.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
It's really interesting what you say about like when you revisit the scene that you auditioned with and like we love especially like book adaptations that like we met working in a bookshop and
yeah
like you say, like you read all the books and everything
yeah
from like your first initial impression of the character, having read it and then auditioned for it, doing your own take
yeah
to being cast and then filming. Did your perception and your idea of your character change heavily once you'd got to set and met the cast and the crew?
It didn't change heavily. It did. I did have to, in that first kind of week of filming, the director pulled me to one side and said, we have to make sure she's likable. She's this...
Sorry.
Because I'd done a lot of work. Before I even had the audition, I managed to listen to the first book. And
oh,
she's
nice
very heavily present in the books.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had this sense of who she is. And then before the recall, I'd managed to listen to the second book.
Mm-hmm.
And then I used the books a lot for my work before we started filming. And by the time I got to set, I had a really strong sense of specifically her relationship to Daniel, who the whole series follows, and me and Matt, the actor who plays him, were able to have those chats in the green room, which was really nice.
That's nice, yeah.
But because it's set in the 80s and I play a very upper class woman and the costumes are amazing.
Yeah.
Makeup's incredible.
Oh, I can imagine. Yeah. Yeah.
She's very poised and I sort of had this like slight Princess Diana reference in my head. And I think you've just got to be careful with a part like that, that she still feels accessible and not just like a stuck up bitch.
Yeah.
I think after my first couple of, one of our first scenes that we filmed, is this boring? Should I tell them?
No, we love this.
Okay.
Please, yeah.
I don't want to be that actor that's just like, industry.
No, industry.
Please,
we love it.
One of the first scenes we built, we filmed, was an interview scene where Neil, the detective played by Amit Shah, is interviewing everyone after this murder has happened. And so almost everyone was in, like numbers like 1 to 15 must have been in on that day. And the way they filmed it is they just kept the camera rolling and we all had to walk into this huge, big like hall, which is supposed to be our home.
Yeah.
And sit on the couch and answer questions by the detective. And they were like, we're just going to do it. Like, you come in, then one of you leaves, next come in. And they were calling next. And so the whole film crew was there. the director was there. Everyone was there. And, you know, all these amazing actors that I know from the telly were there.
Yeah.
And everyone was so nervous because it was sort of like... Like, you just never get that in telly when you're all together.
And all seeing each other work.
And you're all sort of doing the same scene, but from your character's perspective.
Oh, God.
And, yeah, it was that day that I think I just got a bit stiff. And he was like, just make sure that she's, you know, likeable.
Yeah.
But it was quite nerve-wracking.
Yeah, wow. I can imagine.
But everyone was nervous. And that was the lovely thing to remember.
I was going to say, it must feel like a bonding experience almost, you know, you're all going through that, you're all acknowledging that you share the nerves and, you know, you've all still
and at the same time, like, it's your job.
Stage, you must spend so much time together bonding as a cast, because like kind of your rehearsals are quite together, especially if you have like a big ensemble and stuff, they're usually there the whole way through. But like, is it different bonding with the cast on screen if you're like being called on different days? Like,
yeah, it is. Yeah. And I think this is probably the most bonded I've been with a TV cast because I'm in it more than I've been in other things.
Yeah.
There was another job I did where I felt like I really bonded with some of the women in it. But yeah, just by sheer virtue of being in it a lot, I think I bonded with people more, and a lot of it was filmed on location, so there was no going back to your trailer in between.
You'd just be
in this huge stately home, just chatting about life and about acting. And Matt, the main actor, he was in the Harry Potter films as a child, and so he's got this amazing wealth of experience and story. And so it became, because we're best mates in the thing, like, we developed this really lovely platonic kind of chemistry that we wanted to find between our characters by also getting to know each other.
That's so nice.
Individuals.
Yeah.
So interesting. You often hear, like, when people get cast with other people, the directors or the crew are like, can you go out for dinner? Like,
can you guys hang out, please?
I think in One Day, I know you're in One Day, but I think I saw an interview where, like, Leo and Amberka had to, like, meet up loads before shooting even started to, like, get that friendship going that the characters like kind of started with.
That was a lovely job, actually, because that was we were again all on location, so we all, for that week, I just filmed for a week, we were just all in every day together, sitting around this big table waiting to film in this big fake TV studio. And so, like, I've still got mates from that job. And also, like, you just go in, you're just like, you know, how's your love life? Like,
it's just how you're doing.
You just exactly you go in, and I think that creates these kind of strong, albeit often short-lived, bonds.
I think actors are obviously so good at, like, well, acting relationships anyway, but I think in personal lives as well, we're just curious people, do you know what I mean? Like, every actor I've met is so easy to get along with because you're interested in people and background and stories. That is so lovely, like building that relationship off screen or stage as well as on.
I've actually found that that is a theatre people thing. That, like, that bonding I've had much more in theatre, but I think a lot of actors, especially actors who started in TV and have only ever done TV, I'm not sure a lot of them have that as much.
Interesting.
And I think
very different worlds.
And I think it can be very lonely being like a number one, or, you know, especially if you're young and there's a lot of pressure on you. Like, I know in One Day there was so much pressure on those two. And they were in every single scene. So it was just relentless. And so, but we had a nice time because we were just like,
you're just there, I think, for a week.
Yeah. Like, when you do comedy, it's just like, you just meet so many funny people.
Yeah.
But yeah, that camaraderie, I think I've found much more in theatre.
Interesting.
Do you have, like, speaking, then you've done comedy and now you're doing a crime genre. Do you find that kind of specific genre in sort of projects exciting to do as an actor? Does it like give you something to, I don't know, hone in on? Or?
Yes, I think like understanding the genre is always a really tricky part of auditioning because sometimes it's not clear in the material you've been sent. Sometimes it's really obvious, like with Witness for the Prosecution, like I knew Agatha Christie. Yeah. It was so clear to me who this woman was and how that should manifest in my body and my voice. So this TV show, I would say the genre is cozy crime.
I was gonna say when we worked in the bookshop, we worked on one of the floors that had the that crime section in it. And the bookseller who takes care of it, our mama, she is the queen of cozy crime. Exactly.
Well, we had Richard Coles come in and do a signing.
Lovely Richard. I love him so much.
Did you meet him?
I did meet him, and in a very beautiful cosmic twist, he is going out with someone who played my dad in my first job.
No way!
Yeah,
that's so weird.
Who also played a vicar. So it's really lovely. Yeah.
So full circle.
That is full circle. Look at that.
Very full circle and very lovely. And he's such a clever man. And talking to him, like he really does have that vicar thing of like, he just enables you to completely open up.
Yeah.
And you suddenly find yourself like telling your life story.
Like, here are my deepest, darkest secrets.
Yeah. And he's cheeky and he swears and he's funny and he's just, he's so charismatic. And he did visit set one day and he does a tiny little cameo.
Oh, I was hoping it would be that.
Listen out for it. Yeah, I think it's in episode one. So that was lovely. But finding the genre of the piece sort of came for me once I got my costumes. And I happen to think I've got the best costumes in the show. And once I got that, and I got these beautiful tailored riding jackets, and I got these gorgeous like slippers, and the I sort of found this image of Isabella Rossellini in the 80s.
And style icon.
And I sort of sent that to the hair and makeup person as being like, I've been thinking about this. What do you think? And she was like, this is so helpful. Let's work from that. And then, so I gave that to the costume designer as well. Like, I've sort of been working with this.
Yeah.
Is this in your remit? And she was like, yeah, we can definitely. So I got like with these amazing like waist-high trousers and sling backs.
Nice.
And,
so cool. Nice.
Then once I got that, I was like, okay, this is helping me realize that it's the genre is a bit more formal than I'd realized.
When you did a Witness, did you watch the production before you went into it?
No.
Good. Because there's like people that do that, but I think I would be thrown so much if I see somebody else do a part that I just signed up to do for 6 months.
It was a very conscious choice, and I think I was the only person in the company who did that. Everyone else went to see it. I think a few people went to see it because they wanted to see if that was a job they wanted to be a part of.
Get a feeling for it, I guess, right?
And during rehearsals, a few of the company went to see the previous cast. But I think, I think it's an ego thing, if I'm being honest. I just wanted to do my version of her. And I didn't want anyone else's version of her in my head. And I also didn't want to feel insecure that someone was doing a better job than I thought.
Did you meet the actress who was in it before?
Did. She was lovely, and we sent each other little letters when I started.
There's
this week when you cross over and you're in their dressing room during the day and they're in there during the night doing the show, so we'd leave each other little notes.
It's really nice,
it was really nice, but you know, you want to be respectful as well and be like, it's your role until I take over on Tuesday or whatever. But the actress who's playing that role at the moment, Lara Lemon, she's an incredible actress. She was the understudy for the role when I was in it. And so I think she must have done such a stellar job of having seen mine. I know she saw a previous cast, to then like make it her own,
yeah,
is like such an amazing skill,
yeah,
and requires, I think, a real like sense of resilience and
yeah,
self,
absolutely,
to do that.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think that's really cool. So I think for her that was a really exciting thing to be like, oh, I've seen all these different ones, mm, and now I've got
now
my version.
Yeah, exactly. Whereas, now I can do my thing.
Like, yeah, no, yeah, it has to be mine. Yeah. Sorry.
That's a good one. Why do you think that, you know, cozy crime always comes back, Agatha Christie always does really well on the West End? Why do you think that is? Like, what do you think it is about the crime genre that makes people so, especially the period ones, you know, Agatha Christie, the one that you're doing now, like what makes it so attractive to people, you think?
Well, I think Agatha Christie was, I think her work is extraordinary, and I think I can't say that without also acknowledging how problematic she was as a person.
Yeah.
But I think that she writes such interesting characters.
She does, yeah.
And so often it's like, it's always like the good looking guy who's the baddie. And I think that reflected so much of her personal life, her personal betrayal that she experienced with her first husband. And I think that's what I get from the TV show as well, is like they're just really good characters.
Yeah.
So the plot is interesting and the plot has a hook and you want to find out who did the murder.
Mm.
But as you go on, you start to just like get really invested in these people's lives.
Yeah.
And I think that's what people love about it, is they get the mystery and they get these really quirky humans to fall in love with or hate.
Yeah. No, yeah. True. Is there anything that as an actress you're like, this is a role that I haven't done yet, this is a genre that I haven't explored that I would love to explore?
Oh, good question. I've never professionally been in a Shakespeare, much to my own chagrin.
Yeah.
So I'd really love to do one.
Yeah. Do you have a favourite?
Yeah, As You Like It and Twelfth Night to Biggie.
As You Like
It's
my favourite.
I love that one.
I love that
Rosalind. I might just be getting on a bit to play Viola, but I think Rosalind or Viola would be my two biggies.
Mm. Wow.
I've not done much classical work at all. I've not done Chekhov. Love to be Masha. So there's like that kind of like bucket list stuff, but I think in recent years I really, sometimes you've just got to work, right? You've just got to pay your bills and you've got to do a job, and sometimes a job comes along, and I don't think these are nearly as often for most of us, where you're like, that ignites something in me. And for me, I really tried to only do things that pass the Bechdel test, and I really don't go up for roles anymore that don't have names. So like sometimes in telly you'll be like, you have a nice little scene, but it will just be like woman number one.
And
like, no, I think I just want to play people with names. And I want it to pass the Bechdel test, and If I can, I want it to be something that ignites something in me. And usually that's the new stuff. There's this, usually that's the new stuff. And like a show like Severance that just did something so different to what we've seen.
I love that show so much.
Yeah, it's so good. And I just think in this climate, because the TV industry is in a crisis in this country at the moment, in this climate, to be able to be part of something new feels so far away. So like to be part of something new that really ignites something in me, I'd jump at the chance.
Like I've immediately sign you up.
There's a writer I've got my eye on who's she's done some amazing, she wrote 1536 at the Almeida about Anne Boleyn. And she's just written this new Emma that's gone on at the Rose.
Is
it Ava Pickett?
Ava Pickett.
Have you had her on?
We love Ava
Pickett. No, but we love her, we follow her. She's amazing.
That's so funny.
And she's, I did a reading of one of her plays last year while I was in Witness, because the same producers are producing it. And I don't think I can talk about what it is because I think it's coming out.
Yeah.
But I saw one of the producers yesterday and I was like, that's something I would love to be a part of.
I was going to say, we followed her for a while now. Yeah. She's phenomenal. Her work's incredible.
She's really clever.
Yeah.
And presents it in a really accessible, quite subliminal form.
Yeah.
And I really like it. And I just think, being able to be part of new stuff that's doing something different.
Yeah.
It feels like such a privilege.
And the female characters she writes as well. Yeah. Are so strong and independent.
I was going to say, like a good voice.
Proper Essex girls as well.
Yeah.
I was born in Basildon.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, just to round it up, is there any advice that we haven't touched on that you have for anybody listening who, not just actors, but anybody who's a creative and who's trying to, you know, find a footing, break in, any words of affirmation?
Yes, I think two things spring to mind. One, I think I've given you as advice before,
crying at the national team.
Yeah. Comparison is the thief of joy. Oof. And you cannot compare your career to someone else's and it make you feel anything other than terrible. Yeah. Even if you get, they did this study and they set this challenge of people. They said, go on social media and compare your self to peers in your industry who do the same as you but who are more successful, and come back and obviously said, I feel terrible.
Yeah.
And they said, now go and do the same thing but to peers in your industry who do the same thing as you who aren't as successful as you, and they reported the exact same levels of mental health. So like comparing up or down. It just doesn't feel good. And it's so difficult not to do, and we've all done it. I've definitely done it. I don't think social media helps with it at all.
No, I think it makes it much, much worse.
But I think your career is so specific to you, your work is so specific to you, your journey is so specific to you, that just comparison is going to absolutely rob you. So that'd be my main one. And then the other one is the thing that we've already touched upon, which is don't wait for the phone to ring, live your life. Because we are artists, and we're what we do is political, and what we do is an act of politics, I think. And you cannot sit at home if you're privileged enough to be able to do that, which most of us aren't. Most of us are out working. You cannot wait for the phone to ring. Like, your career is something that happens to you. Like, you have to live life, because if you can gather the money to go on holiday or to go and see a play or to go to an art gallery or to go traveling or, you know, whatever it is that you need to do to make yourself feel alive, that is going to be so important to your artistry.
That's so true.
Thank you so much. Amazing advice.
Well, thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
My first poddy.
Woo! That's so exciting. And congratulations on everything.
Can you tell us when it comes out in the UK?
Channel 5 in October. I don't know the exact date yet. And it's out in the States as of today.
So exciting. Look at that. I was going to say, by the time that this drops, it's probably out already.
Find it on Channel 5.
Channel 5.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah.